Our scripture reading is from Galatians. If you were called to freedom, brothers and sisters, only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for self-indulgence, but through love become slaves to one another. For the whole law is summed up in a single commandment: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. If, however, you bite and devour one another, take care that you are not consumed by one another. Live by the Spirit, I say, and do not gratify the desires of flesh. For what the flesh desires is opposed to the Spirit, and what the Spirit desires is opposed to the flesh. For these are opposed to each other, to prevent you from doing what you want. By contrast, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, humility, and self-control. There is no law against such things, and those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passion and desires. If we live by the Spirit, let us also be guided by the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, competing against one another, envying one another. The word of the Lord.
Well, good morning. This summer, we're going to be going over the fruit of the Spirit that Jim read for us, these nine different characteristics of what it means to live with the Spirit of God. And also this summer, in our youth program on Sunday nights, we are also going over the fruit of the Spirit, and so that I get to come to church on Sunday mornings and hear what our pastors have to say, and then take that and just re-say it to our youth on Sunday nights. And some might call that stealing, but I like to call it synergy, so. But in our introduction, one of our young men said something quite profound about why these things are called the fruit of the Spirit and not something else. And he said, well, fruit takes a long time to grow. That if you had an apple seed and wanted to get apples, it would take years before you actually had the fruits of your labor, before you actually got what you wanted. And in the same way, these things, this love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, kindness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control, can take a long time to develop in ourselves. And another interesting thing about the fruit of the Spirit is that it is the fruit of the Spirit and not the fruits of the Spirit. Even though there's multiple of them, it feels like it should be multiple fruits, but it's just one fruit. And I think that means all of these things are designed to be present in the life of a Christian. That we can't just say, I'm naturally a patient person, so I'm going to focus in on that. And self-control doesn't apply to me when I'm at the buffet. And maybe I'm speaking for experience there, but that's not the goal, I think, of the Christian life. It's to experience all nine of these things simultaneously. And thankfully, like our kid said, that can take a long time to develop. And today, we're talking about the first fruit of the Spirit, love. Before we get there, I'd like to wish all our fathers in the congregation a happy Father's Day. I know for many, Father's Day can be complex or difficult. Maybe you have a rough relationship with your father, or you may have a rough relationship with your children. I understand that. I have a complex relationship with my dad, so sometimes Father's Day historically has been really tough for me. This Father's Day is very, very new and different, because now I experience from a different perspective. I'm a father. My wife gave birth to our son 2 months ago, and this is my first Father's Day from this vantage point, and it's pretty exciting. Years ago, I saw a study that may not mean anything anymore with the advent of cell phones, but it said the most phone calls or long-distance phone calls made in the United States on any one day. Does anybody want to take a guess what that day is? It's Mother's Day, yes. Yeah, and the most collect calls was Father's Day. And if you did not grow up with a landline in your home, that may not mean much, but you used to have to pay to call somebody long distance, so a different area code than yours. And so if you collect, the receiver has to pay. But becoming a dad has taught me quite a lot about love. The first time I held my son really broke into my heart a new way to experience and show love, and maybe gave me greater insight into the love God has for me, maybe for us. Because I held my son, and I thought to myself, I don't even know if he knows I exist, if he can see who I am, or if he'll remember this moment at all. And he probably won't. And yet, there is nothing I would not do for him. And yet, there's nothing I would not give because I love him, even if he can't really love me back. And I think that's the same way with God, that God experienced that same love with us, that this profound love comes to us even if and when we cannot see it, recognize it, or feel it, it is still present. And so, when Jesus is asked the greatest commandments, it's no surprise that he says it is love. And this love is broken up into two parts. This first part of love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind. That's the idea of love. And so I've been asking a lot, people in our congregation, our youth, our staff, other people that I know, what does it mean to love God back? If we kind of maybe experience the love of God, but how do I love God back? What does that look like? And I got some good answers, I think. And some of the things that are common is one of the ways we love God back are by following the commandments. And Jesus will even say this later in the Gospels. He'll say, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. And so that's a good way, I think, to say that's how we love God, was well by following the rules and guidelines that God gives for our world. But I don't think that that is a complete picture of what it means to love God. Because a life spent in service of God is not the same as a life spent with God. And I think it's possible to follow every rule and commandment that we're given or followed in the best of our ability and experience no love or no tenderness or no excitement about our faith in any way, shape, or form. In fact, we'll see this when Jesus tells the parable of the prodigal son. The older son, who is the obeying, good, honest son who follows the rules, does not experience fully the love of the Father. And the same way, we can be trapped in the same way, that we spend all our lives following the rules outside of the context of God's love. And I think that that will ultimately lead us to bitterness and despair because we followed the rules and other people didn't. And they turned out just fine. And that's not fair. And I think that that's, again, that's part of what it means to love God, but that's not completely what it means to love God. Another example that I was given that I liked a lot was, well, loving God is knowing God. And I agree. But I think sometimes we can get confused with knowing about God is the same as knowing God. By knowing about the Bible or knowing about church history or knowing about these things is not quite the same as knowing the heart of God and how it operates in my life and the lives around me. It's like the same idea of like at a marriage where the husband has chosen to write his own vows and says, my wife is 5'5". She has blonde hair. She was born in Fort Worth, Texas in 1970, and she weighs... And then the marriage is over at that point right there, right? So, yes. Because knowing about God is not the same as knowing God. And I thought, now in the context of my relationship with my son, how do I want my son to show love to me? And it's not just by following my rules or our guidelines in the home, and that's part of it. And it's not just knowing things about me, and that's part of it. But ultimately, my desire for my son to show love to me is by spending his life with me. By letting me in on his hopes, fears, dreams, and excitements, by being a part of those things. And I think that's what God desires too. What it means to love God is to spend a life with God. And that leads to love, because then we get to know who God is. So what does it mean to spend a life with God? That seems really hard and complex, and I don't know what that fully looks like. Thankfully, fruit takes a long time to grow. So we may take a long time to grow into this. Mother Teresa, in an interview with Dan Rather in the 1980s, he was asking her, what does it mean for you, or what do you say when you pray? And she said, well, I don't pray. I don't say anything. I just listen, which is a weird way to think of prayer. And then he says, okay, well, if you're listening, what does God say? And she said, well, God doesn't say anything either. He listens. And he says, well, how does that work? And she said, well, if I have to explain it, you'll never get it. And unfortunately, I think I need it explained. But this is a way that I think we grow into living our lives with God, is by taking the time not just to give petitions to God, but by saying, God, what are you doing in this world, and how can I listen to your voice here? How can I be still with you and hear what's going on how you love myself, my community, and this world? And then this idea that love, and the love presented by Jesus, is with all your heart, all your strength, all your soul, and all your mind, this intense love, not just a passing love the way I might love nachos, but an intense depth of love that Jesus is calling us to love God. And I'm going to look to my son again here for another example, because he experiences this kind of love, and it is not for me. My wife is higher on the totem pole, but it's not entirely for her either. He experiences his powerful love for his bottle. We bottle feed, and it's a powerful thing to try to feed him with the bottle, because the moment he sees it, he loses his mind. Arms shake back and forth in front of his mouth. Head goes side to side, like he can't even get it in his mouth because he's so excited that it's there. He grunts and snorts in excitement. It's pretty cute. And if you take it away, he cries and wails out for it. And I think that's the same love that we're supposed to have for God. This, I desire God in my life, in every aspect of my life, so much that when it is missing, I cry out in agony because this thing I love is not present. The next part that Jesus goes into is the idea of loving your neighbor. I am really, really bad at this. I don't really know my neighbor's names. I think one of them's name is Mark. I'm an introvert, so the idea of knocking on a neighbor's door to introduce myself and saying hello gives me severe anxiety. But this is the call of Jesus, is to love our neighbors as ourselves. So my version of love in the neighborhood is I drive around and I do one of these, you know, off my steering wheel, a wave like that. You know, I'm an introvert, but I'm not a jerk. So, you know, we want to do those things. But I don't think that's exactly how God desires love. Because in the same way, loving God is spending a life with God. Loving our neighbors is the same, spending a life with neighbors. And for me, I take inspiration from my father-in-law. And I know you don't know my father-in-law, but trust me, he likes you. He is a profound extrovert who loves everyone he meets and gives of his time and energy to those around him. When my wife and I had our son and we went to our grandparents' house, his house, his neighbors, people we've never met before, brought us gifts because they've experienced his love so profoundly. And so that's what I think this means, this idea of life with our neighbors, our community, our coworkers, our families, our church, can only happen when we're together. It only happens when we're honest and vulnerable with one another, and we see the honesty and vulnerability with someone else and love them and show them grace and compassion. There's a third aspect of love that's kind of hidden in Jesus's talk. When he says, love your neighbor as yourself, it implies that we should love ourselves. That's the way it works. That the way we love ourselves and care for ourselves is the same way we should love others. And so if we don't do a very healthy job of loving oneself and caring for oneself, it can be difficult to love someone else. And so this leads to another question. Well, how do we love ourselves? At a previous church that I worked at, I left, and one of the youth who had graduated from high school, went off to college, ended up as a contestant on a TV show called America's Next Top Model. Is anybody familiar with the show? Some of us are. It is a modeling competition based in New York, so they try out to be a supermodel. And so out of solidarity and support for this youth that I once knew, I watched a season of America's Next Top Model. I was living at a camp at the time in a single wide trailer alone, and I watched a season of a modeling show, but not in a creepy way, in a supporting way. Yes, in a generous way, yes. And she made third place, so I had to watch the entire season of this show. And the host of the show at one point asked these girls who are trying out to be models, so they are have definitive beauty in them, and the host asked them, what don't you like about yourself? And every one of them broke down crying, describing their flaws and blemishes and the things that they disliked about who they were. Their mole, their eyes being too close together or too far apart, their eyebrows not being thick enough or too thin, their hair color, their hair, it was too straight, it was too curly. Each one of the girls had things about themselves that they disliked intently. And I could identify, because I think there's a lot of things that I look at myself and I see my flaws, my failures, the ways that I haven't been as kind a husband or father as I wanted. I haven't been as good as a youth director as I wanted to be. The ways that I've been short in my temper and my stature and disliked those things. But God is calling us to do something hard, and that is to love oneself. To look at all those flaws and blemishes and look at ourselves through the eyes of God and say, I am worthy and valuable. And the eyes of God prove us to that by the cross, by Jesus dying and saying, this is what you are worth, because you are precious in my sight. This summer, our youth group is going to New Orleans for a summer mission trip. And there are still sock sales available in the fellowship hall to support our trip. And one of the ways we've restructured the way we organize our mission trips is not by our teaching or our service, but by our goal of getting our youth to fall in love with the city that we're in. Getting our youth to fall in love with one another, with their God, and themselves. And our program is designed to hopefully get these things, that they fall in love with these places, because that is what God is calling us to do. To fall in love with God, to fall in love with our community, and to fall in love with ourselves. In the story from Mark, Jesus beautifully describes the greatest commandments, and the scribe, kind of like an unprepared teenager at a test, just kind of sort of describes it right back to him. Has nothing else to add except, you're right, and let me rephrase this. And Jesus closes this time with this idea of, you are not far from the kingdom of heaven. And when we experience these types of love, even for a fleeting moment, we are not far from the kingdom of heaven either. Because it is not a distant place or a distant time, but a present experience. And each one of us get to tap into that by love.